Today's episode is sponsored by Morgan Stanley. Will digitalization of drug development cure the healthcare industry? What will digital disruption mean for patients, healthcare providers, technology companies, and investors? Learn more at morganstanley.com/drugdevelopment. Morgan Stanley & Co., LLC, member SIPC.
Opening bell in about 20 seconds. Let me just set the stage for you.
Money, money, I want more money.
You cannot have it all.
This whole system is too confusing.
Hi, I'm Ben White, and this is Politico Money. Scott Linsicum was bumming around on Twitter one Saturday morning, and he saw this picture of a woman at a Donald Trump rally. She was wearing a t-shirt that said something like, "Tariffs are great," and it just set him off.
That is the dilemma for trade policy experts. In a nutshell, the protectionist side has a three-word issue: trade kills jobs. Whereas the other side comes back and says, actually, the composition of jobs changes and we get better jobs. And by that point, the audience has fallen asleep. So I created a shirt to kind of memorialize that lopsided debate.
That t-shirt has pretty much gone viral. And what does it say? What was Scott's pithy response?
It says, "Tariffs not only impose immense economic costs, but also fail to achieve their primary policy aims and foster political dysfunction along the way." Another guy on Twitter picked it up, and actually he had an Amazon t-shirt store. He made the shirt for real, because Amazon being wonderful, you can do this in the snap of a fingers. And now we've sold well over 1,000 t-shirts. All the profits are going to the Foundation for Economic Education. So another part of the joke is to get free market economics education to support that in response to, of course, flat earth protectionists. It's been featured now. We saw it on CNBC, on Meet the Press, as you mentioned, Bloomberg. So yeah, it's been pretty hilarious to see this thing kind of take off.
I don't understand why that shirt hasn't been sent to me yet, but we'll rectify that at some point. Please tell me these shirts are made in China.
I don't think they are, but they are made in like Nicaragua or Malaysia or somewhere else. So I've definitely checked. They are imported for sure, because I would like the United States to focus on jobs, outside of the textile industry.
When he's not making t-shirts, Scott Linsicum is an adjunct scholar with the Cato Institute. He writes on international economic policy and politics. And he's my guest this week because tariffs and trade will just not go away. He and I chatted after the U.S. had threatened another tranche of tariffs on China, but before China had responded to say it would hit back if the U.S. made good on the threats. Which is all a perfect backdrop for the first question I put to Scott. Is the U.S. in a trade war right now?
We trade guys hate to use the term trade war, but I think that at this stage, we're still in trade dispute, trade skirmish. We will shift into trade war, I think, if this big tranche, this $200 billion, ends up getting implemented. We're not going to know about that for at least another 6 weeks, give or take. Into October, if the next thing you see about $250 billion worth of Chinese imports, which is about half of Chinese goods imports covered by new U.S. tariffs, then I think it's pretty safe to say that we're in the full-blown trade war.
Gotcha. All right. So just to level set for people, we're at $34 billion in tariffs the U.S. has put on Chinese goods. We're talking about another $16 billion now, so it would take us to $50. So I guess that doesn't qualify in your world as trade war level, but $200 billion would. I want to read you something that Wilbur Ross, the Commerce Secretary, said. This is Thursday that we're taping this, August 2nd, and he's made this case a number of times, and I just want to get your thoughts on it because it's kind of the big picture approach to this from the Trump administration. And he's saying basically that you put even $200 billion in context of an $18 trillion U.S. economy and, hey, no big deal. This trade thing with China isn't that big a deal. So he says, all right, let's put it into arithmetic perspective. 25% on $200 billion, if it comes to pass, is $50 billion a year. $50 billion a year on an $18 trillion or so economy is 0.3%. It's not something that's going to be cataclysmic. So are we all in econ nerd world and trade world making too much out of this fight with China?
Yeah. So I love this argument. This is the what I call the so I burn down your house, but at least the neighborhood is fine argument. And it fails on a couple points. I mean, first is that, look, you know, there are going to be real harms to real companies, individuals, farmers, exporters, importers. Those folks are going to have real harms. Those will be real jobs lost, real companies that downsize or can't make investments or declare bankruptcy. So those are direct, immediate impacts. The other problem, though, with that is that it completely ignores the indirect effects of tariffs. So not only are you going to see just a $50 billion tax on these products, but you're going to see domestic prices for this directly competing goods go up as well. So that's another new tax on consumption. You're going to see knock-on effects where companies, like I said, you know, if companies go into bankruptcy, those have multiplier effects. You also have tremendous amounts of uncertainty you're injecting into the environment. So you might not have people who are directly affected or even indirectly affected, but they're going to hold off on making a new investment because they aren't sure about the investment climate here or abroad. So then you factor in the Chinese retaliation. And you get to the point where you're not talking about that discrete tariff hit, which still is a $50 billion tax increase. You're actually looking at quite more significant indirect effects.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's take it down to the microeconomy level for just a second before we get back into the big macro picture of the U.S. versus China and why Trump is doing it and what he hopes to achieve and all of that. And just talk about steel and aluminum tariffs for a second, because I think people, you know, maybe forget a little bit as we're in the China phase of this, that, you know, steel and aluminum tariffs are in effect, and they're in effect on China and the EU and Mexico and Canada. And they're having real world impacts now. So let's talk about how does a tariff on steel show up in the wallet of an American consumer? Why should I care that there are steel and aluminum tariffs in place right now?
Right. So the first thing you see is that not only did imported steel get more expensive, but all steel in the United States got more expensive. So that essentially we've created an island of high-priced steel and aluminum. Now that is of course going to affect the bottom line of a lot of manufacturers that use steel and aluminum. Now, you know, some manufacturers, particularly large ones, have longer term contracts. So they're just now starting to feel the pain, but smaller companies actually, you know, who are forced to buy on the spot market or whatever, they're going to feel that more quickly. Now every company that's faced with a higher raw material cost has a choice. They can either eat the higher cost themselves, or they can pass it on to consumers. And that's where, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to start seeing these costs passed on to consumers. And we're starting to hear companies that say point blank, look, you know, we have tried to avoid raising prices. Consumers, of course, hate it when we raise our prices, but we simply can't do it anymore. And we're going to start passing those costs on. Now, for certain products where steel and aluminum are small parts of the total product, you know, that's going to be a small increase. But for other products, you know, nails, for example, you know, where steel is the whole cost, you know, you're going to see pretty dramatic increases. Or, you know, you're going to have a company like Mid-American Nail that's going to, you know, just start laying off workers and potentially just go out of business.
All right. Let's talk about China and the Chinese and their approach to trade and how they've operated vis-a-vis the United States historically. Like, if there's one thing that you can get kind of all sides on this to agree on, is that China does bad stuff.
Yeah.
Has done bad stuff. They take our intellectual property. They do force technology transfers when companies do business in China. And they're not, you know, particularly fair to the United States. And Trump is not wrong about that. The Obama administration certainly said the same thing and took other kind of actions to try to address that, you know, going through the World Trade Organization and so forth. So if China is a bad actor, why shouldn't Trump say, I'm going to slap all these tariffs on you until you change your ways?
Right. So I think there's a couple flaws in that. You know, there's a big difference between everybody agreeing on a problem and then actually finding the right solution. And unfortunately here, they've picked, in my opinion, a very bad solution in tariffs. You know, not only do tariffs hurt the United States, hurt U.S. consumers, retaliation ends up, you know, hitting exporters. These retaliatory tariffs are actually not very effective when it comes to solving, you know, unfair foreign trade practices. So the threats of tariffs worked less than half the time. And then once the tariffs were in place, the success rate went down to something like 20%. So not only are you smacking U.S. consumers, U.S. manufacturers in the head with the tariffs, not only are you hurting them, but you're also not pursuing a strategy that's proven very successful in the past. And unfortunately, we're seeing some of that occur again, right? You know, today the Chinese government was adamant that they were going to retaliate and that this was now a matter of national dignity. So, you know, these tariffs being so aggressive, being so unilateral and outside kind of the normal course of the multilateral trading system have actually, it seems so far, have emboldened the Chinese at least for a little while. And you get that, you know, it's and away from China, you know, we see similar things with, you know, like Canadian retaliation against Trump's steel and aluminum tariffs is incredibly popular in Canada. And so when you take these aggressive unilateral actions, you actually make a solution oftentimes more difficult. The second problem is that we actually have better solutions to any sort of policy problems we see with China. You know, you mentioned the WTO. You know, the WTO dispute settlement is actually quite successful in encouraging changes to Chinese policy. The Chinese frequently, almost always, comply with adverse WTO decisions. You know, nobody's perfect, and that includes the United States, but there's a pretty darn good record of that. And you don't have to take my word for it. Just ask USTR. USTR wrote a report just a few months ago and highlighting all of their wonderful successes in encouraging Chinese policy reforms through WTO dispute settlement. The problem is not that those rules don't work. It's that they haven't been tried very much. You know, I think we have one case against Chinese intellectual property practices that has been finally resolved, and China did reform the offending practices at issue. We have one more case that's pending, but it's very narrow. And China's actually made WTO plus commitments on intellectual property, and we are not pursuing and are trying to enforce those commitments. So, you know, it's a bit rich to say that the system has failed when it, not just this administration, but past administrations really haven't used the system to its fullest extent. And then finally, you know, there is this other way of containing Chinese economic aggression, whatever you want to call it. And that was through this little thing called the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which everybody agreed, you know, was going to produce some economic benefits, but was actually more intended as a geopolitical tool in order to provide an alternative to China's economy for a lot of Southeast Asian and Asian economies, creating kind of an alternative supply chain of sorts. And we know what happened there with the Trump administration. And, you know, it's actually quite rich to hear Secretary Pompeo right now talk about how the United States really wants to engage in the Asian region and really wants to economically engage. And yet, you know, this is the same administration that withdrew from the TPP on the first day in office.
I mean, pour one out for the TPP. We'll be right back with more Trade Talk with Scott Linsicum. Stick with us.
And now, a word from our sponsor. A message from Morgan Stanley. Digitalization has transformed virtually every sector, from retail to travel to finance. But it's been slow to gain a foothold in the healthcare industry, which is heavily specialized and regulated. Now, as technology companies make meaningful moves into healthcare, disruption is coming to the drug industry. While the impact of digitalization on drug companies hinges largely on price transparency and technology integration, investors should consider how it has impacted other industries. Learn more at morganstanley.com/drugdevelopment. Morgan Stanley & Co., LLC, member SIPC.
Let's sort of frame what the Trump administration is trying to do here as we know it so far. I mean, obviously, they want to force some concessions from China on trade with these threats of much bigger tariffs. And in the meantime, they're willing to essentially, you know, give handouts to industries that are hurt in the short term. And I'm thinking of the $12 billion that's been proposed for farmers, particularly soybean farmers, who are getting hit hard by the retaliatory tariffs. And then they think that, you know, if they give out this short term aid, eventually China will give concessions and no more aid will be needed and they will achieve their goals. Is that basically how you understand what they're doing?
Yeah, it is. I think the only problem, though, in what you said is that the goals are so nebulous that not even the Chinese government or Republicans in Congress actually know what the goals are. And that's the big problem, that, you know, if this really is short-term aid to trade-affected farmers, for example, you better hope. I mean, you're talking about $12 billion taxpayer dollars. And, you know, the Chamber of Commerce calculated that, you know, $27 billion more would be needed to help all the other folks that have been hurt by this, you know, blossoming trade war. So if you're going to do that, you better have an end game. And right now, there really isn't a clear list of demands from the United States or anything on what the United States would consider an actual victory. You know, we know what USTR has said. USTR has said the removal of these intellectual property practices. The president, however, talks about the trade balance. He wants to see a reduction in the trade balance. Guys like Peter Navarro talk about reshoring the supply chain or breaking up Chinese dominance in certain supply chains and industrial base activities. So, you know, and then Secretary Mnuchin, you know, he kind of just wants to get a deal on Chinese agreeing to purchase more U.S. stuff. So, you know, you get all these voices saying different things, and it's really impossible to know where the end game is right now.
Are you trying to tell me that there isn't a completely clear and coherent strategy from the Trump administration on how to approach trade with China? I mean, that's a pretty scandalous accusation that you're making.
I'm sorry. You heard it here first, folks.
Well, let's talk about the Chinese versus the U.S. in a trade war. Let's say we get the real deal and we go to $200 billion and maybe $500 billion. There is some conventional wisdom out there that the Chinese will, in fact, buckle
right, eventually
because they have more to lose than we do. They export much more to us than we send to them. So it's be in their interest to eventually cave and say, okay, we'll do A, B, and C, and hopefully President Trump decides that that's okay. I'm not sure that's right. And, you know, there are many levers that the Chinese can pull to mess with us. They do manage their currency. And if they decided to, they could devalue it significantly. They can also do all sorts of regulatory stuff to our companies operating in China to make life more difficult for them and to block all these companies that want to access the burgeoning Chinese middle class market. There's a lot of stuff they can do. They also have a political system, obviously, where, you know, the Chinese leadership doesn't have to worry about getting voted out of office. And they have this national dignity. They do not want to be seen as kowtowing to Trump and the United States. So what is your take on, you know, the idea that if Trump just rattles the saber enough, the Chinese will say, okay, enough already, let's move on?
Yeah, I think that for the reasons you just described, I think it's far from certain that it's simple calculus based on the bilateral trade balance. You know, the other thing I would note is that that argument implicitly concedes that the United States will also face a lot of pain. And, you know, that it always strikes me as a very bad argument or a rather large gamble that, you know, we're both going to hurt, but they're going to hurt more. Well, you know, for the reasons you mentioned, even if you grant that they're going to hurt more. I don't see why that's really a great strategy to begin with. But even then, you know, given the U.S. political system, given, you know, we have midterm elections in a couple months, we have a very vibrant media, and we have a very, very vocal domestic stakeholder class that can make their grievances known very well to all sorts of politicians. There's no clear indication, in my opinion, that that's guaranteed to work. Now, look, it might. I don't really know. But as I said, if you look back at the history of this type of saber rattling, it doesn't tend to work out very well, and it only seems to work when an economy is really just dependent on the U.S. market. And these days, China really isn't that dependent on the U.S. market. Now, they are in part, but, you know, less than one-fifth of all Chinese exports go to the United States. So they have other export markets. The other thing is, it seems to discount how dependent other Asian economies are on the health of China's economy and on kind of the open trade system. You know, again, Secretary Pompeo is championing this idea of U.S. engagement in Asia, but a lot of players in these smaller Asian nations are saying, well, you know, that's great and all, but hey, please don't have a trade war, because that's going to cost us billions. That's going to hurt us a lot more than, you know, the chump change you throw at us for an infrastructure project.
Right. I should note, we're talking about Secretary of State Mike Pompeo there and his recent comments about Asian nations outside of China and our desire to engage with them. We're going to wrap soon, and I want to ask you a little devil's advocate question on the auto tariffs and the EU. Trump supporters will say, hey, look, his approach works. We got the European Union to agree to some things. I'm not exactly sure what they agreed to and if it's really different than what they would have done anyway. But he threatened these 25% tariffs on all imported automobiles from the European Union and elsewhere. And then you got the European Central Commission President Juncker come to the United States and basically come to some kind of agreement to not do that right away. So, long way of asking, does Trump's approach work? Did it work with the EU?
You know, I think it's too early to really say. But the handshake deal with Juncker really hasn't produced much of anything other than a pause in new tariffs. So that seems to be the really concrete deliverable. The rest is, you know, these kind of vague notions of maybe some sort of trade deal someday, a trade deal that sounds conspicuously like the TTIP trade that was already ongoing. Or, you know, kind of a scaled down version of the TTIP. The commitments on soybeans and LNG or on WTO reform and so forth were all things that the Europeans were going to do anyway, either because of market forces or because of their own, policy initiatives. So there really doesn't seem like there was much caving from anyone that the tariffs had much of an effect other than to push the sides to this kind of, you know, handshake press conference. So, you know, to the extent that if tariffs do end up causing some sort of great concessions on major EU sticking points, then yeah, we would have to revise kind of our view about how these things work and how they don't. But, you know, we're just not there yet. There's just no evidence of that deal producing any real major breakthroughs or concessions.
Gotcha. Just to flag a couple things, you mentioned TTIP there. That's the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, another trade deal that Trump has essentially walked away from, that the Obama administration was working on to eliminate a lot of these tariffs between the U.S. and the EU and eventually get to what Trump says he wants, which is kind of a zero tariff and non-tariff barrier world between the U.S. and the EU. And then LNG, liquefied natural gas, something that Trump has said that the Europeans agreed to buy more of from us in order to not get these auto tariffs in. All right. Give us your prediction for how the U.S. trade spat with China, we'll call it that for now, winds up. How does this one end?
Yeah, well, I can't. So I'll give you the two options. I know that's not fair, but I think there are really two avenues at this point. Avenue A is that because the president has never defined objectives, it makes it really easy for him to declare victory. And I think there is a good shot at this trade war never happening, because the U.S. and China get together. The Chinese agree to lower, you know, the trade balance by a certain dollar figure and buy some more soybeans or something. Trump declares victory and the trade war is called off. So, and you know, that's right before the midterms. Republicans rejoice. All of Trump's followers, you know, hop on Twitter and yell at people like me forever doubting his genius, so forth and so on, right? But then I think the other option, which is at least as likely, is that we're in for a long slog here with these tariffs, that another tranche of tariffs gets implemented. And, you know, unfortunately, we're facing the implications of that, you know, economic implications, geopolitical implications of that for quite a while.
All right. So let's kind of end on the T-shirt question, going back to, because I think it's a perfect encapsulation of how challenging the world is now for people like yourself, for free market capitalists and free traders who simply can't make these arguments in the simple way of the economic nationalists. And we are in this period of, not just in the United States, but in Europe, of rising economic populism and nationalism. And they are very emotional appeals to people who are, for decent reasons, unhappy with how the global economy has matured into what it is now, and maybe don't like their wages being stuck and don't like the fact that their plant closed at some point, you know, in the 70s or the 80s. So how does Scott Linsacum, how do free market, free traders, you know, kind of win back the argument on trade?
Well, you know, look, I think that President Trump has actually done a great job of it himself. I mean, if you look at the poll numbers, foreign trade and globalization are more popular today than at any point in the history of the polls, from Gallup to Pew to the Chicago Council and so forth. You know, certainly you see Republicans have taken on a more Trumpian view, but Democrats, by contrast, are now huge free traders. Now, look, is that going to be the case in another 5 years? I don't know. But the fact is that, you know, right now there's a lot of public support for trade and globalization overall. But, you know, other than that, if you dig into the polls a little bit, you can actually see that Americans don't like trade wars. And they don't like to see the actual implications of protectionism. And, you know, I think that free traders do themselves a disservice by granting the protectionist argument, or at least starting with having to defend free trade with instead, you know, looking at the evidence of protectionism. You know, sure, I think, you know, free trade is great. It produces all these good benefits, consumer benefits, and so forth. But the only alternative is protectionism. And that alternative is quite bad. It not only, you know, has major costs for American consumers, disproportionately hurting poor American families. It not only, you know, breeds corruption and cronyism in the government, where, you know, you're basically picking winners and losers and you're forcing us to subsidize a couple well-connected companies. But it, like I said, has a really horrible track record of actually encouraging, you know, any sort of positive change in these industries. And, you know, again, when you kind of look at the polling, you see that when questions actually include the real world implications of protectionism, support goes down the tubes. And, you know, you don't even need to look at the polls. Just look at how President Trump is justifying his protectionism these days. You know, in March, it was all about national security, all about protecting the steel industry. Today, no, all of that's gone out the window. Now, all of these tariffs are in place to do what? Oh, to get freer trade, to get zero tariff regime with the Europeans, to get the Canadians to drop their dairy tariffs, to get the Europeans to drop their car tariffs, you go so forth and so on. So even the protectionist in chief is justifying his tariffs on free trade grounds. And in that sense, I think, you know, we're actually doing a lot better than you know, the current moment, how it looks right now.
Oh, so Scott Linscombe saying that the free traders are actually winning the war long term, and maybe that'll be true. I find it hard to believe that in 2020, Democrats are going to nominate someone who's going to talk about how great free trade deals are. But we'll see what the future brings, and hopefully we'll talk to Scott again. Scott Linscombe, trade lawyer extraordinaire, Cato Institute scholar, maker of viral T-shirts. Thank you so much for joining us on Politico Money.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks for having me.
That's a wrap for this week's Politico Money Podcast. Thanks so much to Scott Linscombe for joining us. Our executive producer is Dave Shaw. If you're liking the show, please do subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. Rate us and write a written review. We'll be back with you next week.